I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. Well, today is our last daily show before we transition into the weekly show that will be 2 hours or 76 minutes, depending on how you listen. And very excited about this transition, very excited about what is coming in the future of what we're doing here. Now remember, if you have the mobile app, my dear friend Dan and team member will be posting on the app content daily. Now, this content will be archived shows, but you realize all our shows are relevant because they're based on principles. If you don't have the mobile app or you're unable to get the mobile app, you don't have an Android or an iPhone, then you can go through our archives of hundreds of shows. Find something that matches a topic you're curious about because we have topics like that all over. I guarantee you, you can find something every day. If you wake up every morning and think, wow, I had a thought about that last night, let's see if Chris Ann covers it. If it has to do with the Constitution, it's quite likely that I cover it. Not everything, but most things. And so we want to encourage you to download the mobile app. We want to encourage you to get caught up on the archives because remember, this is a teaching show. This is not a talk show. And there's so much teaching to be had. Speaking of teaching, we are going to be talking today about some very important things that are happening, some important state right, state power issues that we are going to be seeing. Oh, so excited about. And then I want to draw some distinctions made once again in what we are expecting the president to do. And then we're going to talk about Kansas because there's some things going on in Kansas again and some very important things that you can be a part of. So let's see, where should we start today? Well, okay, let's start with Kansas, I guess. You'll remember the Kansas Second Amendment Protection Act and Shane Cox and Jeremy Kettler. The Second Amendment Protection Act passed in 2013, overwhelmingly bipartisan support. Over 80% of the legislators voted to sign it into law. The Governor Brownback signed it into law. And it was a law that said if a firearm or firearm accessory is manufactured, sold in Kansas to a Kansas resident, then the Commerce Clause does not apply. Interstate commerce. And then since the interstate commerce does not apply, the federal government does not have jurisdiction over that sale and cannot enforce federal law. And, you know, all of that went into place with Shane Cox and Jeremy Kettler, but the feds ignored the Second Amendment Protection Act, went in and prosecuted Shane Cox and Jeremy Kettler for violation of federal law, even though federal jurisdiction was not invoked. They got around it by saying that it was a tax issue and not an ATF issue. Isn't that interesting? Using Obamacare as a precedent to say it's a tax, not a penalty. Therefore, we can enforce it because a tax is enforced on every person. And you can't get around that. Wow, I really hate how this stuff works out. The way I warn people that it will work out. Nonetheless, we know the tyranny that was and the oppression on Jeremy Kettler and Shane Cox. We know that their civil rights were stripped from them. And we also know that the legislators, with the exception of three or four, did absolutely nothing to help Shane Cox and Jeremy Kettler. We know the governor went silent, even though he was more than happy to get his picture taken when he signed the law. It was this whole legislative, gubernatorial, political grandstand. They had no intentions of actually stepping up and backing Kansas law, and they ended up destroying these two men's lives. Well, here comes the rest of the story. The Kansas Chamber of Liberty has put together a petition, signed the Second Amendment Protection Act resolution. And you can find this at, the website went away. Why did the website go away? This is really annoying. Okay, so it went away. It is, let me find it. Here we go. It's enforcesapa.com. Enforce, spelled just the way it's supposed to be spelled, and then SAPA, SAPA.com. Enforcesapa.com. Now, this is important. Not just if you live in Kansas. This is important everywhere. Because you see, when the federal government can come and take the power and oppress the rights of the people of one state, they can do that to any state and every state. Let me share with you a quote from James Madison. James Madison was very confident that this is not something that the people would stand by, that the states would stand by and see and just simply accept. James Madison said, quote, "But ambitious encroachments of the federal government on the authority of the state governments would not excite the opposition of a single state, or of a few states only. They would be signals of general alarm. Every government would espouse the common cause. A correspondence would be open. Plans of resistance would be animated." He said, "One spirit would animate and conduct the whole." Because James Madison knew, and I believe he hoped that the states understood, that if the federal government can encroach upon the power of a single state unconstitutionally, there would be no limit to the federal government's power. If one state stood back and allowed the federal government to come out of its limited and defined powers, then the breaking of that limited and defined powers would be the end of a limited and defined government. Because you see, one power usurped is all power usurped. And one state having their power stolen is the authority to steal all power from all states. And Madison believed that these ambitious encroachments of the federal government on the authority of one state would excite all the other states to step up and say, wait a minute, we're not going to step back and let you do this to Kansas. Because if you do this to Kansas, you will be doing this to us tomorrow. And we must stand together against these ambitious encroachments so that we don't fall individually. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the Union. Not to consolidate the states into a single government, but to join the states together in an effort to ensure domestic tranquility, to provide for the common defense of the states, not of the United States, of the common defense of the states, to promote the general welfare of the states, and to ensure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. So that the states could come together and defend themselves from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And James Madison also said the greatest opponents to our federal government admit the state legislators to be the sure guardians of the people's liberty. The domestic enemy that our framers were concerned about was a federal government with the power to wield ambitious encroachments against the power of the states. But then Madison says, but what degree of madness could ever drive the federal government to such an extremity? What degree of madness could drive the federal government to take over the power of the state? James Madison is describing the condition of our federal government as being in a state of complete madness.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Remember, the website is enforcesapa.com. Enforcesapa.com, and it will take you to a petition. I am not a petition person. You know I don't do these sorts of things. But I want to tell you that this is going somewhere. This petition actually has demands that are feasible, that are attainable. Many petitions don't. And this petition, signed the Second Amendment Protection Act resolution, is something that is creating a political pressure on the local government. And because of that, and because of the pressures that local activists have put on the local government, the governor of Kansas, Sam Brownback, wrote a letter to Donald Trump. I'm going to read this letter. Dear President Trump, in November 2016, two Kansans, Shane Cox and Jeremy Kettler, were convicted of alleged federal firearms violations in the U.S. District Court for the District of Kansas in Wichita. The charges against Cox and Kettler were in conflict with our state Second Amendment Protection Act, upon which these citizens relied. Their prosecutions were initiated by the U.S. Department of Justice during the administration of President Obama. The former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder previously had sought to undermine the Second Amendment rights of Kansans by attacking the Second Amendment Protection Act at the time of its enactment. The unfair prosecutions of Cox and Kettler were no doubt an attempt to further this affront to the state of Kansas and to deter Kansans from the exercise of their constitutional rights. Unfortunately, Cox and Kettler were the unwitting victims in this overreaching federal attempt to make an example of someone. Accordingly, I am hereby requesting that you issue a full and complete pardon of Cox and Kettler as to these felony convictions. They should not be subject to further legal proceedings on these matters, as to which they recently were sentenced to probation, and they should be allowed to return to their former lives. Thank you for your consideration of this matter and for your support of the Second Amendment rights of all Americans. Sincerely, Sam Brownback, Governor of Kansas. Now, you know that I have some problems with the way that is handled. But nonetheless, I want us to continue pressuring the local government, the state legislators, the governor, and the Attorney General of Kansas to continue in these pressures. Because you see, we must get some kind of recourse. We must get some kind of relief for Shane Cox and Jeremy Cutler. Their civil rights have been violated by the federal government. They've been stripped. According to the federal government, Shane Cox and Jeremy Kettler will never be allowed to own a firearm again. Shane Cox was a firearm dealer. He had his own store. He's lost that. He's lost everything. They will not be allowed to vote again, according to the federal government. Now, I'm sorry that Governor Brownback thinks that his only recourse is to petition the president for a pardon. That is a recourse, but that is not the only recourse. We need to sign the Second Amendment Protection Act resolution and convince Governor Brownback to restore the civil rights of Shane Cox and Jeremy Kettler in spite of the federal government. They should issue a state pardon. That's exactly what Brownback should do right now, is issue a pardon on the state level, restoring the civil rights. Voting is a state issue. Voting can be restored to Shane Cox and Jeremy Kettler by the governor. The right to keep and bear arms is an inalienable right. But Governor Brownback, in his pardon, could issue a pardon that says, and in the state of Kansas, Shane Cox and Jeremy Kettler will have their rights restored. They can keep and bear firearms. Governor Brownback can issue his own pardon, and that's what we should be pressuring him to do. Signing the Second Amendment Protection Act and getting the people of Kansas and the people of America to force Governor Brownback to issue his own pardon is another solution.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Let's hope that President Trump starts issuing some real pardons. I hope that President Trump issues a pardon for Shane Cox and Jeremy Kettler, but I hope that Governor Brownback doesn't wait. Doesn't wait. Because that just further federalizes our government. That just further proves that our only solution to every problem is let's run to the president, let's run to the federal government to fix it. The president is not a king, and he should not be the one that must lower his scepter to save Shane Cox and Jeremy Kettler. That should happen through Governor Brownback. But I'm pleased that Governor Brownback is stepping up and doing something, which is more than we can say of the Attorney General, Derek Schmidt, and the legislators who have done nothing. I'm still sorely, sorely disappointed. Now, I want to talk about an executive order that is allegedly going to be signed today. An executive order directing federal agencies on how they will apply the Clean Water Act. Now remember, executive orders are lawful when they are written by the executive, the President of the United States, to direct the agents of the executive on how to faithfully execute the laws of the United States. The problem with many of the laws that Congress has created over the last few decades is that they create a law that allows the executive agencies to create their own rules and regulations. So what we have is functionally laws created by bureaucrats because Congress has become weak. Congress has become they've just simply abdicated. Bleh. What is wrong with my speech this morning? They have abdicated their authority to executive agencies. Completely unconstitutional now. The executive, the legislative branch cannot transfer lawmaking power. That is a violation of separation of powers. But that's exactly what Congress has done for the last few decades. And they've done so they don't have to have accountability for these things. You see, that's part of the game. That's part of the smoke and mirrors. Let's create a law to regulate the environment. And then we'll allow the executive agencies to create all the regulations that regulate the environment. So when the people are unhappy with the regulations, we can say, oh no, we can blame the President of the United States because we didn't write that. We didn't write that. It's the President's fault. No, it's not. It's Congress's fault for creating these laws that gives the executive branch legislative authority. Our James Madison, Montesquieu, Thomas Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton, all of them, George Mason, Patrick Henry would be are jumping up and down in heaven right now. Just they have to be jumping up and down in heaven right now over this. It's just craziness. They certainly would not be standing by as executive agents who are elected by no one create legislation that controls everyone. This is the very driving force for our independence. Legislation without representation. And so Donald Trump, we are told, is going to be signing an executive order today that will, at least in part, restore the waters back to the people and to the states. And he is going to sign an executive order that will have executive agents interpret the Clean Water Act as Congress has abdicated their authority to them to do, to define waters of the U.S., as waters that are permanent, standing, or continuously flowing bodies of water. See, right now, I don't know how many Americans know this. Right now, the executive branch interprets waterways as any water that stands for 90 days or more. So if you have a puddle in your yard, you live in a rainy place, and you have a puddle in your backyard that lasts 90 days, the EPA interprets that to be a navigable waterway. And they believe they can come on your property and regulate your land so that you can not harm that puddle that sits for 90 days. That is not an exaggeration. That is an application. That's exactly what they're doing. And so now we're going to have the Trump administration scaling back on that. The Trump administration should be eliminating that. The Trump administration should say, no, we're not going to enforce that. It is an unconstitutional exercise of federal authority. But nonetheless, we're not going to enforce it. That's what should be happening. But we're scaling back. Step by step, I suppose. Happy with the progress that we're making. Happy that we're just making progress, okay? So we are now going to have the executive agency interpreting the Clean Air and Water Act a little bit more reasonably. See, I wish they would just follow the law to begin with. The law says that stock ponds are exempt from the Clean Air and Water Act. And yet, Mr. Robertson is in federal prison right now because the EPA brought charges against him for a stock pond. How do you wrap your brain around that? Joe Robertson in federal prison right now for building a stock pond. The EPA brings charges against him for building his stock pond when a stock pond is exempt from the Clean Water Act. Well, because the EPA lies. And they lie under oath. And they're not afraid of making up data to enforce their authority. Mr. Robertson's stock pond was approved by the Army Corps of Engineers, by the way. It was also approved by his state and local government. The EPA decided that they had more power and more jurisdiction than the Army Corps of Engineers and the state and local government over the stock pond, even though their power over stock bonds was denied by Congress. So as we're talking about President Trump issuing pardons, how about issuing a pardon for Mr. Robertson? How about issuing a pardon for this 77-year-old veteran who is sitting in federal prison, and he followed federal law? See, that's part of what the Freedom Coalition is doing. The Freedom Coalition is petitioning Donald Trump to pardon a whole list of people who have had their rights violated by the federal government. Wrongful prosecution of these citizens of their states of America. And we need to have the executive agencies stopped, and we need the president to correct these executive wrongs. Find out about the coalition at cspoa.org, and let's get Donald Trump to pardon these people. Now remember, their governors could be pardoning them right now, should be pardoning them right now. The governors should be issuing pardons. They can issue pardons, you know. And the governor should be issuing a pardon overriding these egregious attacks of unauthorized federal authority. I would love to see Jeff Sessions respecting state power and pulling back on prosecution of these people. I would love to see Jeff Sessions go through his docket and just simply dismiss case after case after case. These people who are being harassed emotionally, physically, financially by the federal government, psychologically by the federal government through these wrongful prosecutions. As a prosecutor, there's a term called vindictive prosecution, and that's exactly what the Department of Justice engaged in under the Obama administration. And I would love to see Attorney General Jeff Sessions step up and right those wrongs. Give all these people this relief. And if he won't do it himself, then we should get President Trump to do it for him. See, these are the things that President Trump can be doing. There are lots of things that President Trump should not be doing. Lots of things that President Trump does not have the authority to do. And we shouldn't be asking him to do them either. But these are the things that he can and should be doing. Stopping these wrongful prosecutions, these vindictive prosecutions of people and their property. He should be correcting these wrongs and reining in these executive agencies. So when President Trump signs this executive order, we're going to read through it and we're going to go through it and we're going to see if it does what we're told it will do. And we'll see the impact of it. This will be part of our first show, our 2-hour show in our new format. My right to tote the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So here is something that Donald Trump is doing that he should not be doing or cannot be doing constitutionally. He can, if he's operating unconstitutionally, do these things, but if he's operating constitutionally, he cannot do these things. And so I'm reading an article in the Washington Post about Trump inviting a student to his joint address. And it says, her story says a lot about his views on education reform. When President Trump, the article says by Emma Brown, delivers his first joint address to Congress Tuesday night, Denisha Merriweather will be there as his invited guest. And her attendance offers a clue about how Trump might fulfill his promise to spend $20 billion on expanding vouchers and other alternatives to traditional public schools. Merriweather is a young woman who twice failed third grade at a Florida public school before her godmother placed her in a private school. She paid tuition with help from Florida's Tax Credit Scholarship Program, which gives corporations tax breaks when they donate to nonprofits that then distribute the money in the form of scholarships to private religious schools. In Florida, we call them corporate scholarships. And Trump and Betsy DeVos have both said they believe public education is failing too many students. And the solution is to make sure students have more access to alternatives, including private schools. And here's the problem. Washington Post says, and I quote, One of the easiest ways Trump could make good on his promise to expand that access is to create a federal tax credit that incentivizes corporations to donate to state programs such as Florida's. Donald Trump does not have the constitutional authority to create a federal tax credit. Taxation comes through the House of Representatives alone. The House of Representatives alone creates spending and reduces spending. The House of Representatives alone originates money bills. The President of the United States cannot create a federal tax credit. Cannot. And remain constitutionally operational. And we shouldn't be asking him to do that. Consolidating that kind of power in the executive is theft of that power from the legislative. It is a violation of separation of powers. And James Madison warned, when those powers are consolidated in the executive branch, that is the complete destruction of liberty. A tax credit must come by Congress. It must be written by the House of Representatives. It must be passed by the House and the Senate must be given the opportunity to review. And that's how it's supposed to work. The President of the United States should not even be considering creating tax credits. And we shouldn't be considering federal tax programs for private organizations anyway. That is not the role of the federal government, to engage in charity. And these tax programs will just invite more federal government into our education system, not less. We don't want federal vouchers. That's federal power and rule over education. God bless. See you tomorrow.